Ben Heisler joining the show.
Welcome into Arrowhead Pride Radio. Arrowhead Pride, the most popular Chiefs website on all of the internet.
Pass sidearm, pass intercepted. It's Dan Sorensen, a pick six. Dan Sorensen, dirty Dan Sorensen.
All Chiefs, all the time. Here's Pete Sweeney and Jay Binkley.
And welcome into Arrowhead Pride Radio. This week of Christmas, Jay Binkley, Pete Sweeney. He's the editor-in-chief, arrowheadpride.com. Good evening, Pete.
Good evening, Jay. Interesting week, huh?
A lot of stuff. The injury report's out today. Chiefs only had two guys in the injury report. Two guys, that's right.
What a dumb injury report.
Full practices for Andrew Wiley and Ben Neiman, but there is the COVID issue as well. We'll just dive into his. Who's on the list right now? We had guys off the list.
Right.
And we've had...
Do you want to say the current list? Or are we going to say the guys off?
It's the guys off. Go ahead, Pete. We had got Willie... Go ahead.
Yeah. Josh Gordon at practice and Willie Gay Jr., was at practice, so they're off. Chris Jones remains on. And then we also had L'Jarius Sneed, not a COVID-related thing. He seems to be back in the mix from that personal matter. We don't have to get into that. And then here are the guys.
And Chris Jones, you said you were still waiting on that.
Still waiting on Jones. Okay.
Yeah, Jones on the COVID list. Jones, Butker, Kelsey, Hill, Fenton, Bell, Ward, Bolton, Long, Luke, Kyle Long. So might as well throw that in there because it's... Apparently, who's the long guy Jay's talking about? Lucas Niang, Armani Watts, Mike Remmers was added today, as you said. On the practice squad, you have Dieter, Darius Harris, Doris Fountain. By the way, Dalton Schoen from Blue Valley Northwest.
Right.
Re-added to the practice today, and Paul Adams from Mizzou.
If you go to
re-added
our...
to the practice. But yeah. Anyway, that's if the Chiefs list. It's quite extensive.
If you go to our website, I mean, typically Wednesday to Friday, our deputy editor, John Dixon, helps me out with this. We put up the injury report. And it looks ridiculous today, as we kind of alluded to. It's simply Ben Neiman and Andrew Wiley. And if you're asking, well, why is that? The guys that are on the reserve COVID-19 list are technically not on the active roster, meaning they don't need to appear in the injury report. So what's weird about that is these guys that are injured and maybe receiving, you know, some sort of remote treatment or whatever, how they're working on their injuries, we don't even really know about it because when you receive any treatment of any sort, like Ben Neiman and Andrew Wiley did today, even despite being full participants, you appear on the report. So if you want to say it's a mess right now in Kansas City, that's a little bit of an understatement. You did have the good news today that there, as Jay opens a Bang energy drink, as you just heard.
Thanks, Pete.
You do have the good news today that only Wiley, who is on injured reserve, he has been added to the COVID list. No other active, or I'm sorry, not Wiley, Remmers. Remmers was added to the COVID-19 list. No active players. Wiley would be the one to likely start at right tackle right now with Lucas Niang on the list. And we'll see who the Chiefs get back this week. It's a little bit easier to get through the protocol now.
And as far as the Steelers, Big Ben's got the pec, full participant today. But the interesting notes here, Pat Freiermuth, their tight end, still did not practice. Concussion.
Ugly concussion.
Chris Wormley, their starting defensive end, did not practice well, got the groin strain, did not practice. Five Steelers went on the COVID list. Montrevious Adams, Zach Brenner, Marcus Allen, not the one that was the running back, and one of their practice squad guys.
Are you telling me not the old
no, time? No, not that one.
All right, just making
sure. The big
sure.
one was Devin Bush. Hmm. 66 tackles this year, couple tackles for loss, two sacks, forced fumble. He's out on the COVID list at this point. We don't know. They're like the Chiefs. They could come back or not come back. We don't know, but that's the Steelers list so far. So they started to get hit today a little bit. So the Steelers.
Well, I actually think, and you know, like this is always the preface, like we are not doctors, so we don't really know. But I tend to think in the realm of COVID, it feels like the Chiefs bleeding may be done because they didn't get any more positives. So you would think, okay, you know, maybe they haven't been around each other enough to have this continue to tailspin into an outbreak. This is the first that we saw of Pittsburgh, and so I almost think that Pittsburgh is more likely to have cases tomorrow than Kansas City. Kansas City might be done. Like, you might have who you have on the list, and you're just going to get some of them back. Some of them won't be back. I went through the percentages before. Typically, these guys getting back before would be like the 10 days is around 20%. I know the Chiefs are optimistic that they'll get some of these guys back. I know that Ian Rappaport and the word has been that Travis Kelce has had mild symptoms. It still remains mysterious. We don't know for sure who the Chiefs might get back, but I just tend to think you're not going to see a ton more guys go on the COVID list this week. And, of course, you're just knocking on wood at this point.
Well, yeah, but the Steelers had that. But here's the good news. The good news is, if there's any good news, that once you've gotten COVID, you're not tested for 90 days. So it's the rest of the season. So they need the guys, the Chiefs, to come
once
off of COVID.
Once they come back.
Yeah, once they come back, they're not tested again.
They're good for the year. Yeah.
Good for the year. 90 days.
That was part of the rule change that the NFL made. Again, the threshold, it still is negative tests, but the amount of COVID that is in your system is a little bit lower per the new test. It's complicated. Moral of the story, as Jay was alluding to, is once these Chiefs are back, they're back until the Chiefs are either eliminated or they are riding in a, I guess, socially distanced Super Bowl parade.
Andy Reid was asked today, has there been any discussions to move the game?
Not that I've heard of, no. It hasn't come through me.
So there you go. Andy Reid says, Tomlin's going to be answering this too, because now.
Yeah.
And again, they're going to look and say, well, the Chiefs have had these problems too.
Right.
But here's the one thing about it. We saw it on game day, at least the games that were moved to Monday and Tuesday. Obviously, Sunday is a different animal as far as the testing on Saturday and being cleared by the afternoon to play. Washington had 16 guys on their COVID list, and they were playing Philly, and they had a separate jet outside of Dulles waiting for those guys that were cleared to fly to Philadelphia. Only one guy cleared those protocols, and we're seeing this. Baker Mayfield, that's the worrisome part is, you know, like the Browns still had to play without all those guys. Even though they moved the game back, it didn't really matter in their case. Yeah. Or it didn't matter in Seattle's case either.
It becomes complicated because exactly that, right? You have the backup of the backup of the backup playing in Washington. You have Nick Mullins starting for Cleveland. And so you might push this back, let's say, to Tuesday. And you still don't have Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill. And now on top of that, you're on short rest preparing for the Cincinnati Bengals. And so initially I figured, okay, maybe this game, you know, might get postponed. But as time goes on here and you're really thinking about it and weighing it, at this point, if Patrick Mahomes is good to go, I think you play the game. You look at Las Vegas right now, and Vegas to me is the greatest indication. I know more and more people are becoming familiar with sports betting. This originally was a 10-point favorite for the Chiefs. They're still 7.5-point favorites. That's a pretty big favorite in the NFL, despite missing two future Hall of Famers potentially in Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And as I said on the Kelce front, I think the Chiefs are optimistic that he gets back in the mix here, you know, again, potentially. So I think you play the game. It may be a little bit uglier. Well, Chiefs have had a lot of ugly wins this year, but it might be uglier than usual, uglier than it was maybe on Thursday night or the game against the Raiders before. If you can win the game, start to get more of these guys back, you got to become feeling pretty good, you know, as you start to look into the postseason here.
Speaking of Travis Kelce, brings us to our feet. Our first peak question of the day. Andy Reid met the media today, and you were asking about just that.
Hey, Coach. Obviously, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are pretty big names to be on this list. When you receive that kind of news, just what's your reaction? What are the conversations amongst the offense like in potentially having to respond without them?
Yeah, so, Pete, we've gone through this for 2 years now. So, you know, anything's possible, and we get it. And the next guys, you know, we've got to be ready to go. They've given us opportunities to replace people with the number of practice squad and elevations and this and that. So, you know, we just go next man up and roll and hope those guys get better. I mean, it's the same way on the other side with the fellas, Pete. They've got to stay prepared too. They don't know when they'll test back in, and so they've got to be ready to go that way too. So, you know, it's a crazy thing that's in motion, fluid, as you'd say. So we just gotta hang with it and make sure everybody prepares himself and ready to play.
And I'll say this about Andy Reid. He's been so even keeled with everything. I mean, he likes to control everything, but this thing you can't. And he knows that he can't control this. And it's about just who's the next guy up. I mean, this really, really tests who the good coaches are or not in the National Football League.
Yeah, I really like this week. I, of course, don't like the circumstances, but I'm a huge fan outside looking in of Mike Tomlin. And the sense that I get between Reid and Tomlin is they're essentially saying the same thing in their own way, right? Andy Reid is mild-mannered and says, we have all these things in place to battle back. It's going to be fine. Next man up. We're prepared. So on and so forth. Mike Tomlin gets on and he goes, I do not care, essentially, in his Tomlin way of saying things. But essentially, they're saying the same thing. And to me, that's what you have in two Hall of Fame coaches that are going to be going out of it or at it this Sunday. And I just love that fact between these guys. And this isn't just a COVID thing this week where everything is going awry and it's going crazy. It's anytime these guys have injuries. It's a no excuse, no nonsense way of going about things. They just have different ways to depict that to the audience.
100%. You know, I just like Andy Reid's approach on everything.
Yeah, I mean, we're prepared if that happens. I mean, you can't predict it. We went this long without it, and so now we're kind of working through it. And you see different teams going through these stretches where that happens, and you know, that's kind of where we're at. So I don't know what's going to happen going forward.
It's business as usual, these teams. And some of these things you can say, why does these things always happen to us? It's happened to a lot of teams, and it's just look at the Chargers, yeah. For example. Eckler just went on today. Bose is on it. I mean, none of these, and they have the Texans this weekend, so not too bright good. For them. But regardless, they're all dealing with this. But again, you see the good coaches that prepare for these opportunities, Pete. And he talked about this. It's business as usual, the same game plan, just different faces. And then you get that little bit of a boost or lift when you have guys come back.
I mean, I think it's the same game plan to an extent. I think we can ask our lead analyst, Ron Kopp, more about this in the upcoming segment. And I think you got to look at your team right now. And I know that Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are still in these meetings virtually as they prepare. And I think it's an A and B type of thing. I think your A plan is to make a game plan offensively like you're going to have Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and you hope that they're able to get through this protocol. To me, the B plan is who's the next best skill position player. To me, that is very much Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I think you got to plan to really run the offense, maybe a little bit more run heavy, maybe a little bit more get the ball into the hands of Edwards-Helaire and Williams, and hope that opens things up for Josh Gordon, who before he was on the COVID list had just scored a touchdown and said, I have to play a little bit looser. I'm feeling okay about that. Me and Patrick Mahomes are coming along. And this team is prepared to go at it with these talented running backs, Josh Gordon, Byron Pringle, and DeMarcus Robinson. As scary as that might sound, I still think that this team is capable of beating the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And speaking on Josh Gordon, we'll get to that a little bit later after we talk to Ron Kopp, because you did ask Patrick Mahomes about Josh Gordon and the possible extra good of Josh Gordon this week. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But coming up next, though, Ron Kopp, he's the lead analyst, arrowheadpride.com. We'll ask him about the Chiefs game plan versus Steelers next.
You're listening to Arrowhead Pride Radio with Pete Sweeney and Jay Binkley, brought to you by the Kansas Lottery. Dream bigger on your official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back to Arrowhead Pride Radio. Jay Binkley with the editor-in-chief, arrowheadpride.com, Pete Sweeney.
What's up?
Joining us now, Ron Kopp. He's the lead analyst, arrowheadpride.com, and he was in here last week while Pete was playing around in Los Angeles.
Playing around.
Good evening, Ron. Interesting week to analyze, because I think you're analyzing guys that might play, might not play, and we've been talking about the Chiefs' game plan. Like, how on earth do you even put a game plan in when you don't know who's playing?
Especially this week, Tyreek and Travis being the names. I think the game plan right now, it sounds like, is run the dang ball, run that thing a lot, especially against Steelers' defense that's been, you know, very, you know, they have a lot of rushing yards this year. So, I'd say if there is any game plan to make, as you're right, I mean, what kind of game plan can you make when your two best offensive players may not even be playing, and the guys behind them have not been very impressive all season? It's kind of been a complaint around all Chiefs Kingdom, the receivers behind Kelce and Hill. So I would say right now, if they're going in with the team they got, run the heck out of the ball and see what happens, play some good defense. That would be the game plan right now if you could make one.
You know what, though, Ron? This is where the Steelers are extremely weak, the running game. You know, I know that they drafted Najee Harris, you know, this year, and he's got over 800 yards, but still 3.6. They're still the 31st best running team in the NFL. That's bad. And they were 32nd last year against the run. The Steelers, 31st in run defense. They're not good. They're not good at stopping the run. So what you're saying, Ron, is exploit their weakness. And by the way, Devin Bush is on this COVID list for the Steelers.
Yeah, I would say, if you're talking about the Chiefs defense against the Steelers run offense, and you mentioned Najee Harris's underwhelming stats, I would say, yeah, it's definitely a good strategy to let or try to or force Big Ben to try and beat you, I would say. Big Ben with the ball in his hands this year. He's making good throws, man. It's not all bad. He's had some up-and-down performances. There's a reason they seem to always come back in these games, even when in the first half they look like, they shouldn't even be on the field. It's because he can still toss the ball around a little bit. He can throw it around the yard. But you'd way rather that be happening, Big Ben kind of throwing up some ducks, giving you some turnover opportunities, rather than let Najee Harris kind of get going, get in a rhythm, because he is a really special player. But, man, he is not in the right situation right now with how unimpressive that offensive line is. And just obviously, like I just mentioned, every defense's willingness to just let Big Ben beat him. Najee's just not getting a lot of space. I kind of feel bad for him.
Ron, it is funny that the run defense is worse than the Chargers. It's worse than the Chargers. Like, how does that even happen? But it is. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, no, we're talking with Ron Kopp, our lead analyst at arrowheadpride.com here on Arrowhead Pride Radio. You'd mentioned the plan to run the offense a bit more through Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They would, on third down, run it a little bit through Darrell Williams. Of the pass catchers that are left here, so take out Travis Kelce, take out Tyreek Hill, who do you have the most confidence in right now if Patrick Mahomes needs an outlet?
Man, that question, man, you wish there was a better answer, right?
Is there any answer to it?
Yeah, you wish there was an answer like, oh, yeah, this guy has a chance to step up. A guy like Mecole Hardman hasn't had the opportunity to, we saw in his rookie year when Tyreek Hill was injured, Mecole did have, a few big plays in that stretch. He saw some of his most productive stretch of his entire career. You kind of want to mention him maybe, but there's just nothing that kind of shows you or tells you from this year that he can really step up and actually be a guy you want to target, 10 or 12 times in a game. Josh Gordon, man, you'd love to see it. He kind of got on he got his first touchdown catch with Kansas City, might get him in a rhythm. Then he goes out with COVID. And then, so you don't know, maybe that set him back a little bit. I'll say Gordon because I do think it's a great opportunity for him. A guy, like I said, just got a first touchdown catch. The offense maybe kind of setting in for him a little more. And this is a prime opportunity where, maybe Mahomes doesn't want to force it to Gordon in other situations when he has Kelce and Hill. But when he doesn't have them, he kind of has no other choice, and it might just be a good chance to really see what Gordon can do when he's forced out the ball a little more.
I tend to agree. To me, Gordon had been coming along before he went on the COVID list, a 6'3", 230-some-odd pound target, and what better time to really reinvigorate your career than this opportunity without Tyreek Hill, without Travis Kelce. I want to ask you about two guys who will be back, because I know we're going to talk a lot to show about guys who won't be back. What do you think, and we're just assuming here, but Gay off the COVID list, Legarius Sneed back in the mix. What do you think the addition of Gay and Sneed back into this defense could mean against the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Man, it is huge. It is really big. Both of those guys impact the quick passing game so much. The Cowboys game was a perfect example of how Sneed, on these quick screen, these quick throws, Sneed can just beat a block real quick and all of a sudden be on top of the guy before he can even think about turning upfield with the ball. And that's exactly what the Steelers want to do. Big Ben has the lowest time to throw per next-gen stats in the entire NFL. So that means, when the ball snaps, he's throwing it quicker from that snap than any other quarterback in the NFL. And it's because they don't want him holding on to the ball. It's a design thing. That offense, they want to get the ball out of his hands quick, because the longer it's in his hands, the worst things can get for the Steelers. He's kind of a guy that will definitely, give up the ball in the pocket or just take a bad sack. So those strategies to get the ball out quick, and guys like Gay and Sneed with their athleticism at the second level, those are guys that can jump routes. Those are guys that can take advantage of, Ben just kind of getting it out real quick without really even maybe thinking about what's going on with the defense, just trying to get it out. Because maybe a guy like Jones is in his face, or former Pittsburgh Steeler Melvin Ingram, getting in on him. So, yeah, I do think this could be a big chance for Sneed and Gay to make a huge impact, because the Steelers do want to just get the ball really quick to their tight ends, to the receivers at the line of scrimmage, and both those guys make a lot of plays close to the line of scrimmage.
Ron, what do you make of the Steelers? 7-6-1. That one tie they had was against the Lions, but it was once again COVID because Ben Roethlisberger was out. of that game and Mason Rudolph started it. But I will say this. You know, they've stumbled and bubbled. The Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde team. But I will say this. Three of the four losses of the Chiefs, the Steelers have beaten those teams. They beat the Ravens. They beat the Titans. And they beat the Buffalo Bills this year. So, I mean, I don't know what to make of the Steelers because, again, three of their four teams they beat are teams the Chiefs lost to.
You know what? What the Steelers are, if they had any other head coach, I think they wouldn't be a very good team at all, and this would be one of the worst teams in the NFL. But I really think Mike Tomlin just makes that big a difference. He really just gets the most out of the guys he has. They have a lot of talent, so I don't. Maybe not the worst, you know, one of the worst teams in the NFL. But I can't see how they can be 7-6-1 when you look at, you know, some of the ways their offense, you know, can't move the ball, and some of the ways their defense. We already mentioned the run defense. This team shouldn't probably be even in the playoff race, but I think it shows a lot. You know, it tells you a lot about Mike Tomlin. This team always plays for their competition, which, you know, maybe that's a fault of Mike Tomlin in terms of tying with the Lions and having these close games with teams you should probably be beating more. But then on the flip side, no matter how good the team is, it seems like the Steelers are always in it, even when they're down. That Vikings game a couple weeks ago, they're down 29-0 in the first half and somehow come all the way back to make it, you know, a game that comes down to, you know, a final play in the last minute. So this team is always going to make it a tough game no matter who they're playing. I think it gives a lot of credit to Tomlin. He just gets it done, man. And this team plays really hard for him. They're a really just well-coached, sound, fundamental football team. Obviously, that defense carries them a lot of the time. But there's a team that no matter what, even if the Chiefs were completely healthy, I wouldn't be super confident in it being a blowout. I think it would be a close game either way because that's just how the Steelers roll. They just play close games.
And one thing about the Steelers is, Ron, you know, last year they started 11-0. Their previous best record of that great organization was 1978 when they were 7-0. And then this year they do it. I've likened it to just trying to squeeze all the blood out of the turnip because they haven't hit that reset button. I thought this might be the year they did it, but Ben came back. This team might be, you know, in a weird position because I don't think that quarterback exists in the draft unless they do some trading around. And there's the free agent quarterbacks and guys they could trade for. But do you look at this franchise the same way you did in the past because they just haven't quite hit that reset button yet?
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I say, you know, if they didn't have Mike Tomlin, it'd be one of the worst teams. I honestly, it's just because of Big Ben. I mean, it's a quarterback league, and Big Ben is legitimately one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the entire NFL this season. And I think that's one thing. They kind of offered him a pay cut this last offseason, and it might have been kind of a way for them to maybe nudge him out of the door, but he took it, and he was willing to play. So, you know, maybe that might have backfired on him a little bit. Because as soon as this team does get a younger quarterback, just a quarterback with a better future, a guy that can maybe move a little better, you know, play in today's NFL, you know, being a little more mobile, they have the receivers, man. Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool are a good little duo, along with Juju Smith-Schuster, although he's a free agent after this season. You know, Pat Freiermuth, you know, we saw the ugly concussion last week. He's a good player, you know, a Pittsburgh guy, you know, Penn State tight end, and he's been a good rookie this year so far. And we know they have the defensive talent. So, yeah, I do think they could be a team that, with, you know, a veteran quarterback, we're going to see a few of them on the market this offseason. It could be a place where a quarterback that kind of wants to go to a well-established place already, a good culture of a team, it could be a place for them to go and kind of all of a sudden a good quarterback could really raise the level of this team, and they could be an actual contender rather than the pretend contender they kind of are right now.
Ron Kopp, lead analyst, ArrowheadPride.com, joins us each and every Wednesday at 6:15, and I have him a lot on Bacon Night as well. Thanks a lot, Ron.
Yeah, thanks, guys. See you next time.
I heard you and Dusty talking.
Yeah.
Roethlisberger is a Hall of Famer because you go to three right. Super Bowls and win two of them, you're in. I heard you mention Eli. He's won two. I think when you win multiple Super Bowls as a quarterback, you're in.
Eli, to me, is the most borderline of that class. I think Rivers probably gets in, too. I think all three of those.
Yeah, but his two Super Bowl wins are against the Patriots, and one was against the undefeated Patriots, which I think carries a lot of water.
Yeah, I think they all get in, and his last name being Manning will certainly help. I want to note here, because just on that last point, I'm seeing on the Jay Southland tow service text line, if I can get it out of
my about mind. My bangs?
No, well, yeah, your bangs are on the way, it looks like, your bang energy drinks. But my hot take, Aaron Rodgers to the Steelers from the 816. Completely agree. I think Aaron Rodgers is a Steeler next year.
They've said that, and also they said Derek Carr, and I just laughed that off. Because, first of all, Carr can't play when it's cold, and it gets cold in Pittsburgh.
I'm not a Derek Carr guy. January. I mean, I'm not clear about that. You'd almost want to convince old-ass Big Ben back for another year.
So you're not buying the one of three quarterbacks that have 4,000 yards passing?
No, I think you're better off even another year Big Ben than Carr, but I think Rodgers is eventually a Steeler.
Coming up next, though, Pete Sweeney and I dive into the action. A couple of the players making their name in the National Football League. Greatest of all time or not, we discuss that next.
You're listening to Arrowhead Pride Radio with Pete Sweeney and Jay Binkley. Brought to you by the Kansas Lottery. Dream bigger on your official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
We didn't weigh their circumstances, no. We weighed our circumstances. Not only the tangible element of our circumstances, but the intangible quality that makes up team. Like I mentioned, when we moved them, we had an opportunity to get value for them. And so that was entertaining and interesting to us. But also, to be quite honest with you and blunt, Melvin no longer wanted to be here. And for us, we prefer volunteers as opposed to hostages. And we believe that that's a formula that really allows us to come together in ways that you can't measure, to do the things that we were able to do last week, to smile collectively in the face of adversity and do what's required to get out of stadiums with necessary wins. And so that's just more of a function of us and the things that we value and less about Kansas City, the things that they needed or the prospects of playing them later in the season.
There's Mike Tomlin talking about Melvin Ingram. I can listen to him talk. He goes crazy on this thing. We don't want to hold him hostage with guys.
But the hostage thing is a thing he says over the years. Like that is not.
No, I know he has a 30-minute press conference and it he goes on and on about everybody. But you know he's going to be asked about the Ingram question,
right?
As far as that's concerned, he traded him to contender and now he's trying to get into the playoffs and has to face Melvin Ingram. I saw a column in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I saw the tweet about Ingram's having the same effect in Kansas City as Pittsburgh. Stat-wise, maybe, but his influence at Kansas City Chiefs.
Box score stat.
But his influence has been a lot greater than we know. It's pressure-wise and stuff like that, in a way that he's influenced teammates. He's been a huge addition.
Yeah, there was a Pittsburgh writer, and we don't need to even reference his name for the article, but he essentially said, yeah, he has the same amount of sack numbers and didn't really dig into any of the pressures, clearly didn't watch any of the film of how Melvin Ingram has impacted the fellow players on the line, I think both in attitude and just an overall, I think, feeling that they can get to the quarterback at any given time. And also setting the edge on a lot of these running backs. Running backs in general, you know, there's been problems with the Chiefs all year, but running backs in general have not significantly damaged the Chiefs, I feel, in most games, right? And why is that? I think it starts up front. And what Melvin Ingram has, at least right now, with this opportunity is being one of the more dangerous players on the line, especially given the fact that Chris Jones is, at this time, as we're talking right now, still on the COVID-19 list. So Melvin Ingram is going to play a huge role. Not that Chris Jones is playing more on the edge in most games right now, but still, I just think in general impact that you can have on the line, to me, this screams, especially if Jones can't get back, as a Ingram/Clark type of game where they're going to have to set the tone.
And he's got the green light, too. If people have been saying Chris Jones has moved exclusively the inside, that's not true. The last game he played, 23 snaps on the outside, 16 inside. Melvin Ingram does make a difference, though, because he can line up wherever, and sometimes that does force Chris Jones to the inside or outside wherever he goes. On the offense, I heard you and Ron Kopp talking about Josh Gordon. Mm. And I will say this, you know, Byron Pringle, he was second leading as far as snap count to Tyreek Hill in two games there with the Broncos and the Raiders. He's just slightly behind DeMarcus Robinson against the Chargers. But he might be an influence in this game, and you're expecting Josh Gordon. Here was your question to Patrick Mahomes about Josh Gordon, who's, by the way, off the COVID list today.
Go next to Pete Sweeney. Go to Pete.
Patrick, we've talked to you and Josh Gordon about how he's coming along, and kind of it's been in a complimentary role. Now you may be without Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Just where do you feel like Gordon is at, maybe in an expanded role, and what gives you confidence that he might be ready for that?
Yeah, I mean, the confidence I have is that he's done it before. I mean, he's been able to go out there and produce at a high level in this league. And so he still has the talent. He still has the work ethic. And now it's about just going out there and getting more opportunities. And so hopefully we were able to get Travis and Tyreek back. But if not, we have other guys that will step up and kind of take on those roles and in part receiver there, running backs, tight ends. And we'll find a way to try to make up for that production that we're missing.
This is a legacy game for these guys, man. You go out there and just, you know, light up with these other guys. And he's 1-2 with backup players like he did in Denver, his first ever start in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes has. And, you know, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, all these guys can, you know, bring that status up and say, by winning without your star players, and well, they might get someone back. We don't know who's going to be back or not. But the bottom line is it's a mess right now because you don't know definitively for your game plan. And a guy like Josh Gordon might be more in the picture this week.
I mean, you know, you could call it a legacy game, and I don't necessarily disagree. You could even go as literal as a money game, right? Josh Gordon, when he was looking for a team and looking at the Kansas City Chiefs, said he wanted to be here for years, plural. Has he convinced the Chiefs that he should be here for years? No, he has not yet. Mecole Hardman, he's going to be going into the last year.
I think he's reminding him that salary cap going to 208.
Yeah, I mean, look, same thing with Mecole Hardman. Mecole Hardman going into the last year of his contract here next year. Has he convinced the Chiefs that he deserves some type of an extension? I think a lot of people would say
Orlando Brown's
definitely not. Orlando Brown is another one where, you know, you could make some holes for a Clyde Edwards-Helaire type of game. You look at Byron Pringle, and it has seemed since the bye week that the Chiefs have leaned in a little bit more into Byron Pringle. He is an unrestricted free agent in 2022. So you could say legacy game, and I don't disagree. I think if the Chiefs go out there with their version of the replacements, and to me, this game would be really in our memory if Kelce and Hill both are inactive for it. And say they go out there with their version of the replacements on offense, I think they could change a lot of minds maybe inside the building if these particular skill players want to remain Chiefs. And then, hey, if the money is not going to work out and the Chiefs are paying Patrick Mahomes a lot of money, then maybe this game for a Gordon, for a Hardman, for a Pringle could convince one of those other 31 teams, look, we could play a role for you. We deserve a little bit of money here when we become a free agent. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons for these skill guys to stand out.
Another question I had for you, Pete, is Travis Kelce. And I've talked about this several times, whether it was in the morning this week and different times. You know, six straight at 1,000 yards, which had only been done three times ever in Greg Olsen. So he's doubled his own record, six straight. I look at guys like Shannon Sharp, did it three times with 1,000 yards, not in order. Jason Witten, Tony Gonzalez, Rob Gronkowski, they'll have four 1,000-yard seasons, not in order. Travis Kelce's put six together. Now, career-wise, he's got a way to go. Tony Gonzalez has over 15,000 yards receiving. Travis Kelce's a little bit under nine. Tony Gonzalez has 1,325 catches. Travis Kelce's sitting with 695. So at his age, it's going to be tough, you know, to get to those like career numbers. But still, when you do it six straight times and you're seventh in the NFL in receiving yardage, last year he was number two. The year before that, he was number one in the AFC. He's making a strong case to be the greatest, not just a Hall of Famer. I think he's already in there. He's making a case to be the greatest of all time.
I think without a doubt. And I think part of it, and we were talking about this in the Hall of Fame for the quarterbacks in that draft class, it's going to be the championships. And so long as he's here for, you know, the next series of years, and I don't see any other reason why to believe that he would be moving on anywhere. I mean, I think you can assume almost he at least gets one more title. And so, you know, you're talking about a guy who could potentially win multiple titles. He already has the one. And then just being, I think, Patrick Mahomes' right-hand man and really his go-to target for most of the years that Mahomes has been, in a sense, in the early part of his prime here, I think is huge for him. And you know, I look at his age, and sure, he's 32, but Tony G played till he was 37. So Travis is at 9,000 yards now. He's about 6,000 short of what will be Tony. He'll pass Rob Gronkowski. I think there is...
Those two are going back and forth.
Yeah, I think there's a potential for Kelce to get close, because in talking to him over the years, when I've had, you know, these opportunities here and there to go one-on-one in conversations with him, I'll tell you, he has no plans to retire anytime soon. This is one of those players where it seems to me, and you know, I guess this attitude can change as the years go on, but right now, his body's going to have to break down for him to be like, I'm done. I understand he's approaching what will be his mid-30s now, but I tend to think he's going to keep going. And if he keeps going, we keep saying the same thing about a guy like Tom Brady. Obviously, very different positions, but everyone is assuming and waiting for Travis Kelce to stop putting up these 1,000-yard years. And it just has not happened yet. And so long as he can stay healthy, I don't see when they will stop. You can play, I mean, the tight end position – you can historically play a little bit longer than you can maybe as a wide receiver or running back. So Kelce still can I think, get close. And it's just going to come to, I think, at the end, how long can he stay healthy in what will be his late 30s? And I wouldn't count him out yet for that Tony number. I know it'll be tough, and I agree with you, Bink, but I wouldn't count him out completely yet.
Yeah, Kelce, 6th all-time in yardage. He goes back and forth with Gronk. Gronk at 9,011. Kelce, 8,947. Total catches, Tony Gonzalez, 1,325, as I mentioned. Travis Kelce, 695. Travis Kelce, 5th all-time in receptions. Obviously, Shannon Sharp in Antonio
Gates. The interesting thing there is
very catchable for him.
Yeah, as you look, Bink, is if you go by the yardage per game, Kelce's at 71.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because Tony G's at 56.
Right. So think
about that. But the 111 touchdowns, Kelce 55. Again, longevity helped him.
Sure. Yeah, no, and that's going to help Kelce do the same type of thing. And I think, you know, and this is obvious, but I'm going to say it out loud. If Kelce can get past Tony G, there's no argument, right? I mean, there's no argument.
None. And I don't even think there's an argument at this point.
I don't know.
If you haven't drafted any of these guys,
I agree.
It'd be Kelce. Coming up next, though, don't forget to ask Pete, hashtag ask Pete. Pete questions, updated look at where the playoff standings sit. We'll get to that, and we'll get to the bottom of Pete's Chargers and how far they can go next.
You're listening to Arrowhead Pride Radio with Pete Sweeney and Jay Binkley. Brought to you by the Kansas Lottery. Dream bigger on your official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
And welcome back to Arrowhead Pride Radio. Jay Binkley, Pete Sweeney. Updated playoff pictures. We sit right now, Pete. It is the Kansas City Chiefs at that number one seed. Number two seed, yeah. Tennessee Titans. And if the Buffalo Bills, we'll say if the Buffalo Bills beat the Patriots this week.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I'm just saying. I don't. I think the Patriots are going to win. But if the Bills won, they'd be the third seed. The Patriots would go all the way to the fifth seed. We're talking about those here in the first seed.
Who's favored in that game?
What's that?
Who's favored between the Patriots and the Bills? Do we know? The
Patriots are, I believe.
Yeah, I would think so. They're home.
Yeah, the Patriots, and they beat them last time in Buffalo by only throwing three passes.
Three-pass game.
And you know what? The Patriots were beaten by 5 completions against the Colts this past weekend. But what'd you make of those games? Because everything that possibly could go in the Chiefs' favor, I thought, did, perception-wise. Obviously, the Colts beating the Patriots is huge. It put the Chiefs back up. They were already the one seed, but it kept them there. And then with the Titans losing the Steelers, that was great. And then the perception game, while these NFC, quote, powers, the Packers struggled to beat a depleted Ravens team. I mean, completely depleted team. They were losing guys.
They could have lost
on that
day.
I know, but then Jimmy Smith was out of that game. They kept losing to Sammy Watkins on the COVID.
The Ravens for this year deserve a lot of credit. I mean, they've been decimated.
For what they're doing.
And for the years that we gave the Chargers, you know, where they were losing all these players and they didn't make the playoffs and there were a lot of excuses built in for the Chargers, the Ravens have lost just as many guys this year. Their entire team, and they've continued to be competitive.
But that was a perception game. By the way, the Patriots, 2.5-point favorites with the Bills. But then the Buccaneers, the number one scoring offense in the NFL, got shut out by a 6-7 team at home. And so far this year, the Buccaneers have lost twice to the Saints. Andy Reid is 35-6 against the division since 15. The Buccaneers already 25% of that, or a third of that, against the Saints this season. So they were shut out there. And then the Cardinals losing to the Lions in epic fashion. I mean, the Chiefs were just looking so good with that Thursday night game against the Chargers. But the playoff picture remains right now. Chiefs are the one seed. Patriots right now the two. Titans the third. Yeah. Bengals the fourth. And then the Colts 5th. Chargers 6th. Bills 7th seed. And this could have all changed had the Raiders missed that field goal. The Browns won that game. Browns would have been the 4th seed. Buffalo would have been out of the playoffs had that happened. But obviously, all the guys, 18 guys on COVID.
This is a wild AFC because say the Browns do make that and they go all the way up, they're in 12th right now. So that field goal was the difference between 4th and 12th.
And playing with Nick Mullins. I mean,
unreal.
They lost 2 quarterbacks. I mean, COVID hit that team hard.
Let's go really quickly here. So if the season ended today, it would be the Patriots and the Bills playing at New England in that wild card game. That's New England. Tennessee would be playing the Chargers in Tennessee. They may be getting Derrick Henry back. I would still go Chargers. Where would you go in that?
You know, I'd probably go Chargers there too. I have my issues with both of them, but I'd go Chargers in that.
Bengals and Colts in Cincinnati. I'd probably go the Colts at that
point. Yeah, I like the Colts. Here's the thing. A lot of people are talking about the Patriots losing to the Colts.
Yeah.
I looked at it the way. The Colts are a team I liked before the season started. They've blown three games, Pete. They had a 10-point lead over the Buccaneers, blew that game. They had a 10-point lead over the Titans, a 14-point lead over the Titans, actually. They lost that lead three times. Carson Wentz threw an interception, his own one-yard line, and they blew a 19-point lead at the Ravens. But I think of all games, the Colts' star rose higher than I think a lot of people thought after that game. This game was more about them to me because they're a team I think could definitely do some damage in the postseason.
That would lead, if we have the Patriots and Colts playing, that would lead in the divisional round to the Chiefs and Chargers for round three at Arrowhead. I think we both would give the slight edge to the Chiefs, in my opinion. I think they would win round three at Arrowhead Stadium. They probably could have won that first game with the Chargers. Who would you give in a rematch in the divisional round between New England and Indy?
The game would be played
in New England.
In New England, unless Buffalo has something to say about that.
We've already eliminated Buffalo, though.
We've eliminated Buffalo. Okay. You know what? I would like to, again, I think the Colts can create some damage. It was a definite mismatch. Frank Reich does things against Belichick that other coaches don't do. He did it to him in the Super Bowl when he's offensive coordinator of the Eagles. They had no answer for him, didn't have an answer for him Saturday night until very late in the game. That's going to be a Jonathan Taylor special.
I think I'd go New England there, but that's our first disagreement. So it would be New England or Indy going into Arrowhead Stadium in the AFC title game. I think we agree here that I think we take the Chiefs against either of those teams at Arrowhead, right? I mean, right now. So, you know, you could be looking at a nice road for the Chiefs. It's not going to be easy when you think about that in who they would have to play. It would have to, end up being the Chargers and then either the Colts or the Patriots. And the winner, of course, would play Kirk Cousins in the Minnesota. No, just kidding. I don't know who would come out of the NFC. But it would not be Minnesota, and that would be your Super Bowl. So, you know, not that Chris Jones is playing more on the edge in most games right now, but still, I just think in general impact that you can have on the line, to me, this screams, especially if Jones can't get back, as a Ingram/Clark type of game where they're going to have to set the tone.
And he's got the green light, too. If people have been saying Chris Jones has moved exclusively the inside, that's not true. The last game he played, 23 snaps on the outside, 16 inside. Melvin Ingram does make a difference, though, because he can line up wherever, and sometimes that does force Chris Jones to the inside or outside wherever he goes. On the offense, I heard you and Ron Kopp talking about Josh Gordon. And I will say this, you know, Byron Pringle, he was second leading as far as snap count to Tyreek Hill in two games there with the Broncos and the Raiders. He's just slightly behind DeMarcus Robinson against the Chargers. But he might be an influence in this game, and you're expecting Josh Gordon. Here was your question to Patrick Mahomes about Josh Gordon, who's, by the way, off the COVID list today.
Next to Pete Sweeney. Go ahead, Pete.
Patrick, we've talked to you and Josh Gordon about how he's coming along, and kind of it's been in a complimentary role. Now you may be without Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Just where do you feel like Gordon is at, maybe in an expanded role, and what gives you confidence that he might be ready for that?
Yeah, I mean, the confidence I have is that he's done it before. I mean, he's been able to go out there and produce at a high level in this league. And so he still has the talent. He still has the work ethic. And now it's about just going out there and getting more opportunities. And so hopefully we were able to get Travis and Tyreek back. But if not, we have other guys that will step up and kind of take on those roles and in part, receiver there, running backs, tight ends. And we'll find a way to try to make up for that production that we're missing.
This is a legacy game for these guys, man. You go out there and just, you know, light up with these other guys. And he's 1-2 with backup players like he did in Denver, his first ever start in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes has. And, you know, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, all these guys can, you know, bring that status up and say by winning without your star players. And, well, they might get someone back. We don't know who's going to be back or not. But the bottom line is it's a mess right now because you don't know definitively for your game plan. And a guy like Josh Gordon might be more in the picture this week.
I mean, you know, you could call it a legacy game, and I don't necessarily disagree. You could even go as literal as a money game, right? Josh Gordon, when he was looking for a team and looking at the Kansas City Chiefs, said he wanted to be here for years, plural. Has he convinced the Chiefs that he should be here for years? No, he has not yet. Mecole Hardman, he's going to be going into the last year.
I think he's reminding them that salary cap going up to 208.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, he same thing with Mecole Hardman. Mecole Hardman going into the last year of his contract here next year, has he convinced the Chiefs that he deserves some type of an extension? I think a lot of people would say
Orlando Brown.
Definitely not. Orlando Brown is another one where, you know, you could make some holes for a Clyde Edwards-Helaire type of game. You look at Byron Pringle, and it has seemed since the bye week that the Chiefs have leaned in a little bit more into Byron Pringle. He is an unrestricted free agent in 2022. So you could say legacy game, and I don't disagree. I think if the Chiefs go out there with their version of the replacements, and to me, this game would be really in our memory if Kelce and Hill both are inactive for it. And say they go out there with their version of the replacements on offense, I think they could change a lot of minds, maybe inside the building, if these particular skill players want to remain Chiefs. And then, hey, if the money is not going to work out and the Chiefs are paying Patrick Mahomes a lot of money, then maybe this game for a Gordon, for a Hardman, for a Pringle could convince one of those other 31 teams, look, we could play a role for you. We deserve a little bit of money here when we become a free agent. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons for these skill guys to stand out.
Another question I had for you, Pete, is Travis Kelce. You know, I've talked about this several times, whether it was in the morning this week and different times. You know, six straight at 1,000 yards, which had only been done three times ever in Greg Olsen. So he's doubled his own record, six straight. I look at guys like Shannon Sharp, did it three times with 1,000 yards, not in order. Jason Witten, Tony Gonzalez, Rob Gronkowski, they'll have four 1,000-yard seasons, not in order. Travis Kelce's put six together. Now, career-wise, he's got a way to go. Tony Gonzalez has over 15,000 yards receiving. Travis Kelce's a little bit under nine. Tony Gonzalez has 1,325 catches. Travis Kelce's sitting with 695. So at his age, it's going to be tough, you know, to get to those like career numbers. But still, when you do it six straight times and you're seventh in the NFL in receiving yardage, last year he was number two. The year before that, he was number one in the AFC. He's making a strong case to be the greatest, not just a Hall of Famer. I think he's already in there. He's making a case to be the greatest of all time.
I think without a doubt. And I think part of it, and we were talking about this in the Hall of Fame for the quarterbacks in that draft class, it's going to be the championships. And so long as he's here for, you know, the next series of years, and I don't see any other reason why to believe that he would be moving on anywhere. I mean, I think you can assume almost he at least gets one more title. And so, you know, you're talking about a guy who could potentially win multiple titles. He already has the one. And then just being, I think, Patrick Mahomes' right-hand man and really his go-to target for most of the years that Mahomes has been, in a sense, in the early part of his prime here, I think is huge for him. And you know, I look at his age, and sure, he's 32, but Tony G played till he was 37. So Travis is at 9,000 yards now. He's about 6,000 short of what will be Tony. He'll pass Rob Gronkowski. I think there is...
Those two are going back and forth.
Yeah, I think there's a potential for Kelce to get close, because in talking to him over the years, when I've had, you know, these opportunities here and there to go one-on-one in conversations with him, I'll tell you, he has no plans to retire anytime soon. This is one of those players where it seems to me, and you know, I guess this attitude can change as the years go on, but right now his body's going to have to break down for him to be like, I'm done. I understand he's approaching what will be his mid-30s now, but I tend to think he's going to keep going. And if he keeps going, we keep saying the same thing about a guy like Tom Brady. Obviously, very different positions, but everyone is assuming and waiting for Travis Kelce to stop putting up these 1,000-yard years. And it just has not happened yet. And so long as he can stay healthy, I don't see when they will stop. You can play, I mean, the tight end position, you can historically play a little bit longer than you can maybe as a wide receiver or running back. So Kelce still can I think, get close. And it's just going to come to, I think, at the end, how long can he stay healthy in what will be his late 30s? And I wouldn't count him out yet for that Tony number. I know it'll be tough, and I agree with you, Bink, but I wouldn't count him out completely yet.
Yeah, Kelce, six all-time in yardage. He goes back and forth with Gronk at 9,011, Kelce, 8,947. Total catches, Tony Gonzalez, 1,325, as I mentioned. Travis Kelce, 695. Travis Kelce, fifth all-time in receptions. obviously Shannon Sharpe in Antonio Gates.
The interesting thing there is
very catchable for him.
Yeah, as you look, Bink, is if you go by the yardage per game, Kelsey's at 71.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because Tony G's at 56.
Right. So think
about 111 touchdowns, yeah. Kelsey 55. Again, longevity helped him.
Sure. Yeah, no, and that's going to help Kelsey do the same type of thing. And I think, you know, and this is obvious, but I'm going to say it out loud. If Kelsey can get past Tony G, there's no argument, right? I mean, there's no argument.
None. And I don't even think there's an argument at this point.
I don't know.
If you have
any
drafting these
agree.
Guys, it'd be Kelsey. Coming up next, though, don't forget to ask Pete, hashtag ask Pete, Pete questions, updated look at where the playoff standings sit. We'll get to that, and we'll get to the bottom of Pete's Chargers and how far they can go next.
You're listening to Arrowhead Pride Radio with Pete Sweeney and Jay Binkley. Brought to you by the Kansas Lottery. Dream bigger on your official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
And welcome back to Arrowhead Pride Radio. Jay Binkley, Pete Sweeney. Updated playoff picture as we sit right now, Pete. It is the Kansas City Chiefs at that number one seed. Number two seed, yeah. Tennessee Titans. And if the Buffalo Bills, let's say if the Buffalo Bills beat the Patriots this week.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I'm just saying. I don't. I think the Patriots are going to win. But if the Bills won, they'd be the third seed. The Patriots would go all the way to the fifth seed. We're talking about those here in the first seed.
Who's favored in that game?
What's that?
Who's favored between the Patriots and the Bills? Do we know? The
Patriots are, I believe.
Yeah, I would think so. They're home.
Yeah, the Patriots, and they beat them last time in Buffalo by only throwing three passes.
Three-pass game.
And you know what? The Patriots were beaten by five completions against the Colts this past weekend. But what'd you make of those games? Because everything that possibly could go in the Chiefs' favor, I thought, did, perception-wise. Obviously, the Colts beating the Patriots is huge. It put the Chiefs back up. They were already the one seed, but it kept them there. And then with the Titans losing the Steelers, that was great. And then the perception game, while these NFC, quote, powers, the Packers struggled to beat a depleted Ravens team. I mean, completely depleted team. They were losing guys.
They could have lost
on
that
day. I know, but then Jimmy Smith was out of that game. They kept losing to Sammy Watkins on the COVID
list. The Ravens for this year deserve a lot of credit. They've been decimated.
For what they're doing.
And for the years that we gave the Chargers, you know, where they were losing all these players and they didn't make the playoffs and there were a lot of excuses built in for the Chargers, the Ravens have lost just as many guys this year. Their entire team, and they've continued to be competitive.
But that was a perception game. By the way, the Patriots, 2.5-point favorites with the Bills. But then the Buccaneers, the number one scoring offense in the NFL, got shut out by a 6-7 team at home. And so far this year, the Buccaneers have lost twice to the Saints. Andy Reid is 35-6 against the division since 15. The Buccaneers already 25% of that, or a third of that, against the Saints this season. So they were shut out there. And then the Cardinals losing to the Lions in epic fashion. I mean, the Chiefs were just looking so good with that Thursday night game against the Chargers. But the playoff picture remains right now. Mm-hmm. Chiefs are the one seed. Patriots right now the two. Titans the third. Yeah. Bengals the fourth. And then the Colts fifth. Chargers sixth. Bills seventh seed. And this could have all changed had the Raiders missed that field goal. The Browns won that game. Browns would have been the fourth seed. Buffalo would have been out of the playoffs had that happened. But obviously, 18 guys on COVID.
This is a wild AFC because say the Browns do make that and they go all the way up, they're in 12th right now. So that field goal was the difference between 4th and 12th.
And playing with Nick Mullins. I mean,
unreal.
They lost two quarterbacks. I mean, COVID hit that team hard.
Let's go really quickly here. So if the season ended today, it would be the Patriots and the Bills playing at New England in that wild card game. That's New England. Tennessee would be playing the Chargers in Tennessee. They may be getting Derrick Henry back. I would still go Chargers. Where would you go on that?
You know, I'd probably go Chargers there, too. I have my issues with both of them, but I'd go Chargers in that.
Bengals and Colts in Cincinnati. I'd probably go the Colts at that point.
Yeah, I like the Colts. Here's the thing. A lot of people are talking about the Patriots losing to the Colts.
Yeah.
I looked at it the other way. The Colts are a team I liked before the season started. They've blown three games, Pete. They had a 10-point lead over the Buccaneers, blew that game. They had a 10-point lead over the Titans, a 14-point lead over the Titans, actually. They lost that lead three times. Carson Wentz threw an interception, his own one-yard line, and they blew a 19-point lead at the Ravens. But I think of all games, the Colts' star rose higher than I think a lot of people thought after that game. The game was more about them to me, because they're a team I think could definitely do some damage in the postseason.
That would lead, if we have the Patriots and Colts playing, that would lead in the divisional round to the Chiefs and Chargers for round three at Arrowhead. I think we both would give the slight edge to the Chiefs, in my opinion. I think they would win round three at Arrowhead Stadium. They probably could have won that first game with the Chargers. Who would you give in a rematch in the divisional round between New England and Indy?
The game would be played
in New England.
In New England, unless Buffalo has something to say about that.
We've already eliminated Buffalo, though.
We've eliminated Buffalo. Okay. You know what? I would like to, again, I think the Colts can create some damage. It was a definite mismatch. Frank Reich does things against Belichick that other coaches don't do. He did it to him in the Super Bowl when he's offensive coordinator of the Eagles. They had no answer for him. Didn't have an answer for him Saturday night until very late in the game. It's going to be a Jonathan Taylor special.
I think I'd go New England there. But that's where that's our first disagreement. So it would be New England or Indy going into Arrowhead Stadium in the AFC title game. I think we agree here that I think we take the Chiefs against either of those teams at Arrowhead, right? I mean, right now. So, you know, you could be looking at a nice road for the Chiefs. It's not going to be easy when you think about that in who they would have to play. It would have to, you know, end up being the Chargers and then either the Colts or the Patriots. And the winner, of course, would play Kirk Cousins in the Minnesota. No, just kidding. I don't know who would come out of the NFC. But it would not be Minnesota. And that would be your Super Bowl. So, you know, I think, you know, you got to see how this weekend goes. There's a lot of mystery to it. Still feel good about the Chiefs. I really do. So long, I'm going to say this with an asterisk. So long as Mr. Patrick Mahomes stays off the COVID list, knock on wood, right? Knock on all the wood. I think you're still feeling good about the Chiefs to beat the Steelers and then to take care of business in those last two games.
The way I have it, if the predictions this week, Chiefs over the Steelers, Bengals over the Ravens, Colts over the Cardinals, Niners over the Titans, Patriots over the Bills, it would be Chiefs still at one, Patriots at two, but the Bengals would be the 3 seed, Titans would be the 4 seed, but Buffalo would be back in the postseason even with a loss to the Patriots if the Bengals beat the Ravens. I know that sounds weird, but if the Bengals
won. Everyone in their car has that written down.
If the Bengals, if the Ravens did find a way to beat the Bengals, they could find themselves still back in the playoffs.
Don't write and drive. I know you need to keep Binks picks, but just listen to us on the podcast instead, right?
Yeah, 100%. Who's the best in the NFC, in your opinion? This is a Pete question from the 816.
Best in the NFC? I want to say the Rams, but they keep giving me reasons not to believe in them. I'm going to stick with the Rams. The Chiefs over the Rams was my preseason Super Bowl pick.
Mine was Packers and Chiefs. Aaron Rodgers, I do believe he's the MVP. They didn't look good against the Ravens. The Buccaneers.
You don't like a Cooper Cup MVP?
I liked even a mock draft a couple years ago. I'll tell you that.
Here
I
we
wish
go.
I could find all these, man.
But you'll always be a Deshaun Watson guy. You're a Watson guy. You wanted Watson.
I was Mahomes.
You should have seen Bing's face when the Chiefs drafted Mahomes.
I mean, just
Mahomes.
Wyatt Teller. I said the draft went the fifth round. The Bills.
Was,
I mean,
Deshaun Watson was right there. I said, Bing, don't worry.
No, that's not true. You're lying to the people, Pete.
Well, this was fun.
We will podcast this out. Arrowhead Pride Radio. Chris Nocero, great job for
Thanks,
you
Chris.
Producing the operation. Ron Kopp from ArrowheadPride.com, lead analyst, joined us tonight. Big thanks to him. He joins us each and every week. We're starting to get into the finishing rounds of the Kansas City Chiefs. Three more games remaining for the Chiefs. And, of course, we'll have you covered throughout the postseason as well on Arrowhead Pride.
Happy birthday,
Radio.
Mom. Got to get that out.
Oh, happy birthday to Pete's mom.
That's right.
Definitely.
Happy birthday.
Shout out Big Pete, Pete's dad, anyway. Merry Christmas, Pete.
Merry Christmas, Pete.
We'll see you all later. Guess what's coming up next, Pete?
What's that?
Pink at night next.
All right.